Thank you so much for the most generous introduction. I did much less in my life, but you know, people who introduce such a panel have to exaggerate a bit. Thank you for your time and interest and curiosity of coming here tonight. I came in ecological shoes. This is my new academic freedom. But I will talk to you in this old role a bit. When I was a justice at the German Federal Constitutional Court, obliged to obey or to found everything or to argue every argument based on that, and that will matter in my few remarks. So I certainly don't speak as a justice. That would be totally, you know, violate every codex I can think of. But I want to talk a little bit about how strategic litigation feels or looks like or what the reality is, sharing some observations from the bench. And since I'm a trained lawyer, I will certainly, yes, emphasize the promises, but really focus on the pitfalls. So I apologize for that in advance already. The promises, I think, are to use a court as a forum that activates, manages, effectuates fair proceedings. Nothing to be taken lightly, nothing to be taken for granted, and fair proceedings are really something that is mostly happening there. The second is strategic litigation or courts are the forum where you get an answer based on law and not on sheer power, profit interest, or other aspects. You usually get a reason that is, we try hard, well-reasoned, and to some degree, always balanced. Maybe not balanced enough from your perspective, but more balanced than a one-sided political pamphlet or a draft legislative act or anything like that. If it's not balanced at all, it will not be the product of a collegiate court. And I'm talking about collegiate top courts, Supreme Courts, human rights courts, such that level. And the promise of strategic litigation is also that you get something which has real effects in the world, slightly different from lots of activism, where you hopefully had a great time, maybe also a difficult time, maybe even a dangerous time, but it's much more difficult to count or assess the effects of activism on the street, in the media, in the academy even, while with the court ruling, at least in functioning democracies, and that's also nothing to be taken for granted, you have a real effect on the ground for people. That is something that mattered to me tremendously when I was sitting on the bench, that whatever I do and write and decide there will have a real, immediate, on-the-ground effect on people. That is an advantage for people who litigate. That is a challenge for those who decide. And that difference in perspective, I think, is important. Regarding the pitfalls in the introduction and announcement to this panel, the slow, elitist, and non-responsive dangers were alluded to, they were never my prime concerns. So when I read this, I thought, like, what? Slow, elitist, non-responsive? That was not the judge's perspective. Because for a judge, it's another case coming onto my desk, and I have to work on it. There's nothing slow or fast around it, simply another case. It might be a bigger case because it might be, well, more smarter. It might be better litigated. It might be more likely to succeed in the court, which in our court system creates more attention giving to that case. And so that makes it, there is a time issue there, but slow, elitist, non-responsive was not my prime concern because, and that's one other point I want to make, it was just another case. So on the bench, it's just another case. There might be two or three little elements which I come back to, which even for judges make it a little different and they're highly ambivalent, so I won't talk about that. So strategic litigation for courts, I would want to say, pose some challenges, but are first and foremost just another case, dropping on your desk and you have to deal with it. However, as a preliminary remark, strategic litigation in the court is not always progressive. And I want to emphasize that strategic litigation, as all other forms of activism, are specifically these days very, very cleverly used by people who have nothing to do with progressive. but some people say steal the formats of the left or use the formats and modes and practices of particularly critical lawyering, strategic lawyering, activism, formally practiced by the progressive side for right-wing, anti-democratic, populist, racist, xenophobic, et cetera, causes. So for the court, strategic litigation as such didn't say a thing about the political leaning or the quality of that thing brought to us. Strategic litigation is not necessarily public interest, progressive, or social justice, because we had seen strategic litigation for the longest time. It was, however, not called that. From banks, from the pharmaceutical industry, from the auto industry by now, where tons of lawyers and tons of PR people and tons of company people sat behind a small little case which asked of us only to get this little pharmaceutical product on the market because of a violation of whatever interest. That was strategic litigation. And we only found out, I was on the court 12 years, for those who don't know the German system, it's a good system. Not lifelong tenure, 12 years only, non-renewable, to be elected by the, basically, parliament, politicians, proposed by different parties, not only the ruling party. President has nothing to do with that, and requirement of a two-third majority, so you have a lot of backup even from the opposition. But aside from that, so 12 years I'm talking about, in those 12 years and in my research longer back, we saw a lot of those strategic lawyering company interest or profit interest cases. And we only found out that they're strategically lawyered because at the very same time when the case was pending, we saw more mail, snail mail, academic articles or expertise opinions, just in case you're interested, from interested big law firms or other experts. That was the only indicator we got. So what's missing in those strategic litigation efforts is the PR and the activism surrounding it, which I think is interesting to think about because it does something to a judge when you get something as legal only plus a little extra expertise, or whether you get something as legal plus activism and media attention and all of that. And by using this gesture, this is not a judgy gesture, right? I indicate how you feel as a judge when confronted with that, oh yeah, I got additional snail mail, they're trying hard. Or you get, whoa, you know, all your friends ask you got that case? That's a difference. And it's ambivalent again. It's neither positive nor negative, but it does something to you in the reality, which we wanted to talk about, of strategic litigation. This, however, means, oh, I forgot the other part of strategic litigation, which is more recent in Europe, but all over the world, the SLAPP cases, those attempts to close off public space for particularly progressive activities, SLAPP cases with the European Union, with the help of Adam Bodnar and others, the Polish civil service guy, great civil rights activist, took a stance against, and we have attempts by particularly anti-democratic political parties to use the courts to, and that is even more complicated, undo themselves. So the German Federal Constitutional Court gets litigation almost every day by now, every week by now, from the AfD, the German right-wing populist party, where they say, we know you won't listen to us, and we know we will lose in your court because you're basically part of the elitist system, da, 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 da. But we try nonetheless to what? Expose you and prove their point. Because usually these cases are inadmissible. So they will then post, oh, inadmissibility decision again from Karlsruhe. See, they're just the same as the chancellor and the other parties. So there you, I hope, well, we can, you know, questions later, but I hope I described that sufficiently, They're turning us against ourselves in using very regular legal modes. And that is more recent in the court, but we've seen that, talking to colleagues around the world, we see that in many courts. And since they're copying from each other the strategies, we will see that in many courts. So strategic litigation, not good per se, used as a tool by many in sometimes even totally anti-democratic efforts, and for a judge, not always easy to identify, but with an effect in case you identify and have those additional factors. However, strategic litigation, cases that are strategically lawyered, are high potentials in the world. They're certainly high potentials in that they certainly can induce change because they are thought through as going beyond the inter partes effect, as going beyond that small case in front of us. Constitutional courts always go beyond the small case in front of us. So for us, it's not that unusual. For other courts, it might be a little bit more unusual. So all in all, they need to be wisely handled. Well, who am I talking to? So if I look at these strategic litigation experiences after 12 years on the bench, with a background in critical legal studies, feminist, radical lawyering, et cetera, and the pressure of the power of such a position, I come up with three aspects that bother me around strategic litigation. And I want to say that the pressure of the power of such a position is something that bothers all the judges I ever met in my life. And you might not think they care, or you might think they're really different, or they might not ever talk to you. Many judges do, also because they want to protect themselves, whatever. But the pressure of the power of such a position is a key factor in how we dealt with such issues. One is in a court, a constitutional court, a Supreme Court, a European Human Rights Court, the ECJ, the International Criminal Court, you have the feeling, whether it's true or not, that it's the last word. You also have the feeling that it's only once in your life that you can say something on the issue. So that case matters to a judge in some interesting way, even more than to a lawyer. Who will get that next client? I won't. I will get one case. One moment in my tenure, in my top super position, as finally I'm a justice of this court and have a say in the world, to say something on this. And I think that's sometimes underrated in the perception of how courts approach these issues. It's not, oh, now let's do what case? No. It's, whoo, now I have the opportunity and the responsibility and the pressure to handle that issue in the form of that case. So last word, once in one's tenure, as one in a collegiate, never alone. There is no such high court in the world that decides anything alone. So you have to deal with, as I kept saying, seven people you have not chosen, you might not have ever talked to in your life, and maybe you never wanted to, in addition. And that also shapes your perception of that case coming to your desk. So in my new academic eco shoes, yeah, the climate case comes to my desk, yeah, okay, the Green Party's proposed me to the court, I'm a greenie, I'm that generation, whatever, whatever. So that court, that case is there, but there are these seven other people. It's the chance in my lifetime to say something about it. And then there's this bohai out in the world of these strategic PR litigation people. Oh, my God. And I just want to try to describe as realistically as possible how that feels. Last point on that. As a judge today, even in a national constitutional court, you're deeply embedded not only in your national governance structure, that is, who's always also on your mind, is not just the litigant, the lawyer, the climate, or whatever, but also politics, meaning the government and parliament, who have to implement what you say. Meaning, without the power of the purse or the cert, you only have your words. You only have your arguments and the respect and recognition of you as an institution. So you handle that carefully, which leads to one of my key concerns. You're embedded in your national governance structure. And second, you're also by now always already embedded in an international, be it regional or global structure. That is, whatever you do in a climate case, you will talk not only to your government, to your parliament, to your NGOs, to you, whoever you care for. You will also talk to Strasbourg, the European Court of Human Rights. You will always also talk to the United Nations, all the human rights please implement that. You will always talk to other nations who read your rulings, at least if you're the German court, but that goes for many, many courts these days. We will not tell you, but we read each other's rulings. So the pressure, which I mentioned, mounts, is even higher because of that. So what do you do? So this case now comes to me. It's just another case. I read in the news, there's a strategy behind it, and there are many people. And sometimes I also see it in the format of the files. So when you look at the climate decision the German Federal Constitutional Court handed down, we combined four cases. It was not just one case, it was four cases which basically came to the court at the same time. It was these Pakistani and Bangladesh people, it was two NGOs, it was young people, climate activists, Kids for Future, and it was some other people. So we did that to deal with the mass appeal to us. So courts have ways, procedural ways to handle that, and lawyers can suggest those ways. And this was a nice way for a court to handle that because we felt if we multiply the perspectives from which to look at the problem, we also may multiply acceptance of whatever we come up with. So multiplication of perspectives in strategic lawyering, meaning not only your case but the three other cases which are totally only related by a topic but not related otherwise, and are a very good idea, a very attractive idea to a court because multi-perspectivity means multi-legitimation, may mean multi-legitimation, and that counts. So in the climate ruling, it was also clear that, as in most strategic litigation cases, things tend to be better prepared. More lawyers behind it. And that's a hard thing to say now, but sometimes also more single issue focused, which for court, once in your lifetime, only that case, big issue, is not a good idea, right? If a strategic litigated case comes to me with a clear agenda, we want a right to the protection of health from the government, which was one of the strategies, or we want a right to the ecological existential minimum, which was another strategy in the case, that is a little narrow for us. And the likeliness for a court like mine, who has to take every case but may reject it if things are clearly unsuccessful in the end, that strict focus on one strategic line of argument may make it very likely that we throw the case out. So multi-perspectivity also regarding the legal grounds, whether you think they're convincing or not, whether they're your favorites or not, is a very good idea. The best cases we got were cases and briefs that offered things to me. And that is my concern, right? One concern about the pitfalls of strategic lawyering. There is a strong reluctance to be used and functionalized in judges. So when I get that bohai out there and all those briefs where I already know, they sat together and thought, you know, what is she going to do? I think, nope. There is a kind of an activism allergy in courts, I would call it. And that activism allergy has to be handled. It's there. You can cater to it. You can also lodge one case where this can go and three regular nice cases where it's then absent. So one can handle it in very different ways, I think. But the activism allergy is in courts, I think. And that's a challenge out there. Because we hate to be functionalized. Or functional, I don't even know whether that's an English term, but used. The second is the pitfall. Courts, particularly those highest courts, have an obligation to listen to all sides and to clearly show that they listened to all sides. This also, to me, allows for the kind of thing, makes me think that multi-perspective critical strategic lawyering is a good idea. Because as in the climate case, for us to look at it from an NGO perspective, a Nepalese perspective, a young person in some island in the Baltic Sea perspective, and from some regular political activism perspective was a very good idea. Because in a collegiate, I had my sympathies with case one. my conservative colleague with case two, my other colleague with case three, et cetera, et cetera. And those sympathies, they are not bias, I'm not talking about, but there are kind of proximities, there are likeliness of empathy, there are abilities to understand. There's something very kind of rational, although they might sound to lawyers irrational. They're very important. So if you have a collegiate court in front of you, this one case, one issue, do it now, is very tricky. Activism allergy, single issue allergy, overly politicized allergy. There are lots of reactions on benches, I think, that come in. And the third one, and that's the most important one, and I will close with that to not totally overuse my time, is, it's the most difficult for me also now in transitional mode, having left the court. For courts to survive, particularly in times when courts are under pressure, as democracy is under pressure, it is suicidal to be overly creative and to cater to political calls. If you can base it there, you should not do it. If you can't frame it as legal and legal and legal again, you should not do it. And you might be so super progressive, but if you can't, you can't. This, in times of pressure on democracy in courts, makes courts structurally even more conservative than they are anyways. At the same time, I think this is an area we have to seriously think about and discuss and reflect upon. How do you imagine, as strategic lawyers, as critical lawyers, how do you imagine the space of courts, the ability of courts to navigate in that space, also the limits of courts' power in this world, to pressure them to use all they have, but don't make them commit suicide. So to not kind of overuse them in your call on what they should do or not do. And I think that's my third concern, so trying to share a little bit perceptions as totally biased as a former judge and totally proud of my court and totally happy with my climate ruling, et cetera, as I am, to have us start a conversation I look forward to and am grateful to be part of. Thank you very much.